Hey, I'm so glad that you're all here this morning. And today, we're continuing a series we began last week, and I apologize, we had a few technical difficulties, so if you missed out and you're like, oh my goodness, what happened in week one, if you have a time machine, you might be able to go back, but unfortunately, the technical difficulties, we did not have a recording of that one for last week, but I promise, you'll pick up right where we are, and we're looking at the story of Noah. Because I am utterly fascinated with this story. I love this story. One of the things about this story, I said this last week, is oftentimes it's looked at as a kid's story. But, I mean, come on, this thing is anything but a kid's story, right? I mean, there's death and destruction, and there's all these things that it would give my son or daughter nightmares if I were to read this story to them right before they go to bed. Especially last night with all the thunder, I was putting my son to sleep, and he's like, what's that rumbling noise? So if I had just read that Noah story before and then the rumbling, probably wouldn't have gone over. I wouldn't have gotten much sleep last night. So oftentimes, the story of Noah is taught in a way that doesn't really give the full picture of what's happening and the brilliance of what we find here in Genesis. So I thought, well, hey, let's spend a couple of weeks looking into this story. And also from last week, one of the things I mentioned is there are 217 cultures, ancient cultures, that were around the world that have flood stories. So what is it that makes the Noah story unique? What is it about this story that we find in Genesis that makes it different than all the other stories? Because again, 217 different ancient flood stories, and here's the thing, most of the stories are older than the Noah story. So the story of the flood that we find in Genesis actually comes within a long tradition of ancient Mesopotamian flood accounts. And what the Noah story does is it takes all these themes and these ideas from these other flood stories, and then it ever so slightly tweaks some of the details. And we said that the brilliance, the message, the truth that's found in the story of Noah is found in those tweaks, in those differences. We call them retcons, a comic book term, retroactive continuities. We can talk about that a little bit later if you want, but sound all like retroactive. If you want to impress your friends this week, be like, hey, you know about retroactive continuities? Trust me, it'll impress a lot of people. So let's talk about one of those ancient Babylonian stories. Let's go to the next slide for us. Now, I spent about 3 hours this week just getting my PowerPoint working. No idea what happened. I lost network, no network connection. I called my friend who's some like guru, and he could not figure it out for me. So I had to do an update and all these things. So all that to say, I got you all covered. I got my notes back on the screen here. It took about 3 hours. But we're here, and for all you taking notes at home, right there on the screen. So we're going to look at a story of a hero named Atrahasis. And this is an ancient Babylonian guy. How many of you have heard of him? All right, no one. And if you want, you can just Google this name, and you can actually read the entire story. This story, oh my goodness, it's a crazy, crazy story. 18th century BCE, Babylonian epic. And Atrahasis, like Noah, I'm assuming obviously that you know the story of Noah, a guy who built a boat. Maybe you saw, what was it, Bruce Almighty or Evan Almighty is the one with the boat. So if you need a little, right, go watch Evan Almighty and you'll basically get the Noah story. Minus a few details, of course. So this guy was commanded to build a boat as well. So we find some similar themes, right? And some of these other flood accounts, remember 217, there's a hero in the story, and the hero is commanded to build a boat. Now, let's look at why Atrahasis, we're going to start here this morning, why was he commanded to build a boat? And if we go to the next slide, let's read some of the story. 600 years, or less than 600 years, I guess they didn't really care too much about details, passed. The country became too wide, the people too numerous. Now, what we just read here, this cycles constantly throughout the story of Atrahasis. And so we find 600 years and then a little bit of narrative, 600 years. So this happens again and again and again. And every single time that 600 years passes, what happens is this one god grew restless at their noise. So the great God who created humanity is upset because we humans are making too much noise. We like to party too much. Remember a couple of weeks ago, so because of everything going on with our house, We're living with my in-laws right now, and a couple of weeks ago we went to bed and there was some noise that was pumping, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I guess my father-in-law went outside and he actually called the cops because there was someone around the corner who was playing music until, was it like 2 a.m., I believe, right? And he actually thought it was me listening to punk rock music upstairs in one of the bedrooms. So, of course, you know, he blames me. Meanwhile, it's the neighbors having some massive, giant party. But it's upset because in the middle of the night at 2 a.m., you want to sleep, do you not? And if your neighbors are making a ruckus and you can't sleep, you're going to be annoyed. You're going to call the cops. That's what any normal person would do. And so what's happening is the gods, they're restless. They're annoyed because we're having too many parties. We're having too much of a good time. So sleep could not overtake him because of their racket. Elil organized his assembly, of gods, and he addressed the gods, his sons, and he says, "The noise of mankind has become too much. I have become restless at their noise." And this happens, like I said, again and again and again. He just keeps getting more and more restless. "Sleep cannot overtake me because of their racket. Give the order that disease shall break out." Making too much of a noise, let's create some sort of disease amongst humanity. And then one next slide. So he says, "Cut off food from the people. Let vegetation be too scant for their stomachs." And it actually continues. There's a few more things that he tells the gods to do in order to wipe out humanity, ending obviously with a flood. So in these ancient flood accounts, why are the gods angry? Because we're too loud. The gods can't sleep. Originally, we were created, humanity was created because the gods didn't want to do their chores. So they created us, kind of like a side note to the creation, because, oh, we want to rest. Well, now their rest is being interrupted. This is not a high picture of humanity, is it? It's not a picture of love. This is a picture of, humans are so annoying. Let's just wipe them out and get rid of them because then we'll be able to do everything that we want to do and we won't be interrupted. Now, enter the story of Noah. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. And here's the reason that Genesis gives for the flood. "The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. So the Lord regretted." This Hebrew word conveys sadness. The Lord was sad that he had made human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. Another way of saying this, his heart was deeply grieved. God was saddened because, not because of the noise. I mean, let's face it, God likes a good party. So it wasn't because of the noise, but God was grieved because of the evil, the wickedness, the breaking of the harmony that God desires for us and for this world. So the Lord said, "I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I have created, and with them the animals, the birds, the creatures that move along the ground, for I regret that I have made them." But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. So we have the Atrahasis story, and the gods said, "We're going to wipe them out so we can have some rest." But they weren't saddened. They weren't grieved. We come to the Noah story, and we see a few. This is a revolutionary story because now we have a God whose heart is grieved by the evil and the wickedness that is seen. Not a God whose heart is grieved by the noise, but who's grieved by the brokenness that he sees within his creation. So I think there's two ideas here that I want to point out about this story that we see in the differences between this one, Noah, and the Atrahasis story. First, next slide, please. What we see in the account of Genesis and the Noah story, we see life is not meaningless, and life is not subjected to the whims of the gods. In the first story that we read, when we come to humanity, to you and me, there was no meaning to our lives. We were put here simply to do the chores for the gods, to do the menial work. There was no grand purpose for why we existed. Life was all about the gods and what they wanted. And if their needs weren't being met, well, then of course we were the ones to blame. We get to the Noah story, and now we see a God of purpose. A God who has given humanity, you and me, some meaning, something to do, a way to partner with God, to bring the world forward into a world of wholeness, in a world of harmony. There is a purpose to our lives. God regrets, God is saddened because we as humanity are not taking our role seriously. Instead of taking the beautiful creation that we've been given, we've turned it around and we started breaking that which we see was established right in the beginning of the story. Let's go to the next slide here. So we see a God whose heart is grieved. Humanity is moving in the opposite direction of that which God desires. Think about Genesis 1. Genesis 1 is all about shalom, harmony, things in their rightful place. Now here we are, Genesis 5, and everything, the beautiful picture that we're given in Genesis 1, just four chapters later, it's all dissipated. We, as humanity, were moving things in the opposite direction. And let's face it, let's be honest. We still do this today, do we not? The wholeness that we long for, well, sometimes we break that wholeness. And the truth is that God is grieved whenever God sees that happening. Because this is a God who longs for things to be in their rightful place, for relationships to be made right, for our relationship with the Creator to be right, to not be broken. And so God's heart is grieved because humanity's relationship with God, it's been severed. It's been twisted, our relationship with each other. I mean, if you just read past Genesis 1, you read about murder, anger, brother fighting brother, family rivalries. I mean, all the things that happen, unfortunately, in our world still today, we see all this happening right in those first couple of chapters of Genesis, right after the beautiful picture of Genesis 1, and God's heart is grieved because we've taken the gift that we've been given and we've turned it upside down. We've used it for our own purposes, to satisfy our own desires, not caring about anyone else or not caring about the creation that we exist in. And so with this story in Genesis, I know it's not often taught this way, but this is a revolutionary story because now we have a God who actually has feelings for humanity. Instead of a God who could care less what happens to us, now we have a God who actually shows regret, whose heart is grieved because we're not living into the truth of who we were created to be. Let's flip to the next slide. Oh, okay. So how many of you have seen the movie Avatar? All right, that's most of you. Great. I remember I saw that movie, absolutely loved it. And so I went back like the next week and said, hey, I got to sit in the front row with those 3D glasses. Love the movie of Avatar. Now, how many of you were depressed after you saw Avatar? All right. I remember reading an article after Avatar came out, and what happened, so interesting, this was like a cultural phenomenon, there was an uptick in depression because of this movie. And it was called the Avatar Blues. People would go see this movie, and they would just say, the world, Pandora, is such a beautiful world. The movie portrayed a world that is just such a beautiful world, but the world that I live in, the world that we exist in, doesn't look anything like Pandora. So people became depressed because they said, we will never achieve Pandora here with this world. Here's a couple of quotes from an article I read about the Avatar Blues. So here's one person. This is actually a few quotes. They showed up in an Avatar forum. I wasn't depressed myself. In fact, the movie made me happy, but I can understand why it made people depressed. The movie was so beautiful, and it showed something that we don't have here on Earth. I think people saw we could be living in a completely different world, and that caused them to be depressed. The beauty that the movie exhibited, people weren't experiencing it here. I can understand why people were depressed, because what they saw in no shape and form was true about the world that we live in here and now. Let's flip to the next one. Next quote. When I woke up this morning after watching Avatar for the first time, the world seemed gray. Avatar had all this color, but this world, it was gray. It was as if all the color that I saw in the movie was wiped out, and the world that I lived in was simply black and white. There was no color, no vibrancy to the world. It was like my whole life, everything I've done and worked for lost its meaning. I mean, this is sad, is it not? Someone watches a movie, and here's their response the next morning. Everything had just, it lost color, and it lost its meaning. Meaningless. I still don't really see any reason to keep doing things at all. I live in a dying world. Does this sadden any one of you reading this? Someone sees a movie and their heart breaks because it's like everything I'm working for, the beauty that I want to see, well, it's as if it'll never be achieved because what I saw in the movie was better than anything I could ever imagine. Here's one more quote. Pandora is a pristine world, and there is the synergy between all of the creatures of the planet. Genesis 1, there's a harmony between humanity and creation, between human and human, between humanity and God, between humanity and the animals. We see this in Pandora, but we don't have this exist here. I mean, what we see in Pandora to some people was a picture of what we're given in Genesis 1. Or we could say the picture that we're given of heaven. A picture where everything is in right relationship. There's this synergy between all the creatures of the planet. I think that strikes a deep chord within people that has a wishfulness and a wistfulness to it. You know what this tells me? And maybe you're like me, or maybe you're like this person right here. You feel within you, you know that the brokenness around you isn't the way it's supposed to be. You turn the news on. You talk to one of your neighbors and you hear what they're going through. You sit by someone's hospital bed. You go through something in your life and there's this deep pain inside of you because you have this acute awareness that what you're experiencing or what you're witnessing, that's not the way it should be. That's not how God desires for the world to be. That pain that we feel, God shares that pain with us. What we see in the story of Noah in Genesis 6 is a God who shares our pain for all the brokenness, for all the ways that this world has not gone the way that God desires, all the ways that we have taken this beautiful creation and have begun to twist it and break it. And what do we see that God does? Well, God is regretful. God is saddened. But why is God sad and why is God regretful? Does he just simply want to wipe out humanity? Because yes, this is how the story is normally taught, but notice that last line, but Noah found favor in the eyes of God. Let's go to the next slide. Let's do a little, let's go in one more slide where we talked about this. Let's do a choose your own adventure. Y'all remember those? Choose your own adventure stories? This happened, you like read a story, and then you come to a thing. If you want to do this, turn to page 68. But if you want to go here, turn to page 17. And then like the story just keeps continuing with that. So imagine this. Imagine that you're in your home, and the TV just fell on your two-year-old. What do you do? Do you run over to where this incident happened, grab the TV, and say, oh my goodness, I hope my TV's okay. All right, you're still not responding. I'm getting a little worried. I know some of you have really nice TVs, but come on, this is your two-year-old. So the TV falls on your two-year-old. You're going to take the TV and you're going to throw it off in order to get to your child. Are you not? Please say yes. Okay, thank you, most of you. The rest of you, we'll have to talk later. A little pastoral counseling. So you don't care about the TV at this point. You care about your child. See, this is what's happening in the Noah story. God is worried about his children. God looks around. This isn't how it's supposed to be. I created humanity for a reason, for a purpose, to give them, as we're taught in the Bible and other places, glory and honor, so they can partner with me in moving this world forward, in creating a sustainable world for all people, for all creation. Humanity has taken the gift, and they've broken it, they've twisted it. And so God's heart is saddened for us, for the pain that we're experiencing, for the fact that we're missing out on the life, the true life that God has desired for us right from the beginning. Now, and so God, like any good parent, rips the TV off and comes to the aid of his children and said, okay, how can I help them fix this? So the story of Jesus, we actually find here in the story of Noah, where God doesn't just leave us by ourselves, but God desires to save and to rescue and to forgive. God desires to wipe out, to destroy all that is preventing us from living into the true reality of who God has created each of us to be. And one of the things that gets in the way, we read about at the beginning of the story, it's the evil, it's the wickedness, it's a word that we call sin. Go to the next slide. What about sin? Yeah, sin breaks God's heart. Sin breaks God's heart because it destroys the wholeness. Here's one of my favorite definitions of sin. It comes from the theologian Cornelius Plantinga. He says, sin is disruption of created harmony and then resistance to divine restoration of that harmony. You ever find yourself resisting God? I know I don't. You ever find yourself, God desires to pull you and you're like, whoa, 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 I don't want to go in that direction. It's going to be too painful. I'm going to have to deal with something that I really don't want to deal with. So sin is whatever breaks harmony, whatever breaks wholeness, and then it's our resistance of God trying to pull us back into wholeness, back into harmony. So God hates sin, not just because it violates his law, but more substantively because it violates shalom. God hates it because it destroys wholeness. The wholeness that you long for, the pain that you feel whenever you experience brokenness or disharmony, God hates the sin because it creates that pain, and that's what grieves God's heart. It breaks the peace. You ever experience a breaking of peace in your life? God's saddened right there with you. It interferes with the way that things are supposed to be. See, God, his love for all of us is great, massive, boundless, uncontainable. It's the sin that God hates. The sin that God desires to wipe away. God longs to save and restore and redeem each one of us. And the sin that we carry with us, that we see in the world around us, that's what God longs to wipe out. So the wholeness that we see God trying to drag us into, and sometimes unwillingly, it's the wholeness that we long for as well. So I want to give you three ways to pursue wholeness in your life right now. How do we pursue the wholeness that God longs for? Three ways. First, keep going. Okay, there we go. One more slide. First, find a sustainable life rhythm. We all know about FOMO, right? What's FOMO? The fear of missing out. And oftentimes, whenever we live with this FOMO, this fear of missing out, it creates an unsustainable pace of living, or it creates a lot of anxiety within us. First off, we feel like we need to be everywhere, do everything, and then we're running, 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 and we have no time to rest. We have no time to refill our souls. And then FOMO, I mean, social media just heightens FOMO to the max because we're looking around at what everyone else is doing. We're like, oh my goodness, they're doing this, they're doing that, I'm missing out. And so it creates this constant anxiety within us that we're living with. I'm missing out on something. There's more that I have to be doing. and we just create this unsustainable pace of life. And we have no time to just rest, to listen to the Spirit, to listen to our soul, to allow our souls to be refilled by God. And so I would argue, how many of you have heard of JOMO? Nice. Okay, I was hoping that no one heard about this. So I heard about this by, there's a doctor by the name of Dr. Will Cole. And you can follow him on Instagram. Give a little shout out to Dr. Will Cole on his Insta page. And he has this thing that he constantly talks about, JOMO, which is the joy of missing out. Come on. Some of you maybe practice smile, but I can't tell because half of you are wearing masks. So come on, that's funny, right? JOMO. I absolutely love it. The joy of missing out. Who needs a little more JOMO in your life? The joy, like, yeah, it's great. I'm glad they're doing that, but I'm perfectly fine to just sit here in solitude. You know, they're going crazy. They're doing that. Well, I'm perfectly fine to just go for a hike and just listen. Perfectly fine to just sit here with a journal and just start writing whatever comes to mind. I'm perfectly fine to sit here with my family, and we're just in the backyard, barbecuing, goofing off, having fun. Everyone else is doing all their crazy stuff on social media. They're all watching the news and hearing all the ways the world is blowing up, but I'm perfectly fine to just disconnect and to miss out so that I can fill my soul again. So let's have a little more JOMO this week, shall we? And then, find a sustainable life rhythm. So there's seasons to life. Sometimes you go, sometimes you push hard, other times you rest. And you need the balance, the yin and the yang. So sometimes there's a season of rest, and then sometimes there's a season of going. Let's go. A second way to find wholeness in your life. Examine your life. Take time to examine your life. Love this quote by Socrates. The unexamined life is a life not worth living. It's brilliant, is it not? The unexamined life is a life not worth living. Absolutely love that idea. When do we take time to examine what are we carrying with us? Is there any sin? Is there any brokenness that we're carrying within us? And we need to get it out. We need to confess it. We need to speak it to God. We need to speak it to each other. We need to address it and deal with it. What is it that we're carrying with us? Whenever we're living in FOMO and we're running, we have no time to examine our lives. So the second way to find wholeness is take time to examine your life. And I love this stat. 95% of our lives are lived on autopilot. 95% of your life is autopilot. Brushing your teeth, grocery store. Hey, how are you doing? I'm doing great. Great. Okay, I'll see you later. Like 95% of life. So that means 5% of the life is actually like really living and really entering into life. Can we do a little less autopilot and a little more entering into the depth that life offers? And then a third way to find wholeness, find others to share your story with. And I want to end just with a quote by Christina Baldwin. This is another beautiful quote that, oh man, I picked this one up long, long time ago, and I love it. As long as we share our stories, as long as our stories reveal our strengths and vulnerabilities to each other, we reinvigorate our understanding and tolerance for the little quirks of personality that in other circumstances would drive us apart. When we live in a family, a community, like Awaken, right? Is this not the type of community that we're longing to build together? When we live in such a community, when we can share our stories with each other, our vulnerabilities, the brokenness, our joys, the JOMOs that we discovered throughout the week. A country, I mean, come on, could our country not use, we live on two polar opposites. Can we not find some middle ground? Can we not be so extreme? Can we find the middle position, someone please, where we know each other's true stories? That's the problem, we never listen to each other. If we could just listen, maybe we would find some of the wholeness that God longs for. Then, it's only then that we remember our capacity to lean in and to love each other into wholeness. Let's take the time to listen. Let's put our swords away. Let's put our sharp words away, and let's listen to each other. Let's be vulnerable. Find others who we can share our stories with. That's what we do Wednesday nights at Community Group. That's why Community Group is such a vital part of who we are at Awaken. And maybe it's not Community Group, but find a community. That's why Awaken exists, so we can have a place where together we can rest in God's grace. And we realize that God is with us, pulling us, dragging us into wholeness. And as we share our stories with each other, and as we live in that grace, we begin to experience the wholeness, the Pandora world that we all long for. Let me pray for us. God, I thank you that you are a God who has great love for each of us. God, I thank you that your love for us is unmeasurable. It's uncontainable. So I pray that we would rest in that truth this morning. God, you are a God that hates sin, that hates brokenness. God, the ways in which we each break the harmony and the wholeness, God, you long to bring healing. God, to shower us with forgiveness. So if there's any ways that we are breaking the wholeness, if there's any sin in our lives, God, I pray that you would reveal that. God, that we would confess that. And as we do, that we would find that healing, that we would find that grace, the love of Jesus that meets us right where we are. So God, I pray that you would speak to each one of us this morning. If there's any ways that we've been resisting your pull into wholeness, God, I ask that we would do a little less resisting this week and that we would open our arms to where your Spirit is leading us. God, and as we follow your lead, may we find the wholeness, the peace, the grace that you long to give us. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.